The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ahmoudou, and welcome to Health Chat. Large-scale armed conflicts have both immediate and long-term effects, especially in low-income countries. Civilians are killed or displaced. Healthcare and other basic services such as water and electricity are disrupted. And rebuilding of the health sector after the conflict is often a great challenge in countries. This is partly due to a shortage of professional staff, financial resources, and effective governance. On today's show, we will discuss post-conflict healthcare, the challenges, and how they are being addressed. Joining us today for more on the subject is Eric Talbert, Executive Director of the global nonprofit Emergency USA, EUSA, an independent nonprofit organization that provides medical care, rehabilitation, and relief efforts for victims in war-torn countries. The work of the organization was featured in the Oscar-nominated short documentary Open Heart. It's about the dramatic story of hope for 8 Rwandan children who make a life or death journey to Sudan to receive high-risk open-heart surgery. The procedure was performed at the Salam Center for Cardiac Surgery, a center designed, built, and run by Emergency USA. Mr. Talbert, welcome to Health Chat.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Also joining us via phone from Los Angeles is emergency medicine physician, Dr. Ed Newton. Dr. Newton has worked all over the world and is a member of Emergency USA Medical Advisory Council. Dr. Newton, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks.
It's good to have you here. Let's remind our listeners that if you would like to participate in the program with questions or comments, you can call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts and questions at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/voahealthchat. We will discuss post-conflict healthcare in a moment, but first, Caroline Weaver has this report about a group that is working in Rwanda. Listen.
New Yorker Liz Alderman and James Okello, a psychiatrist visiting from Uganda, would never have met if not for tragedy. Her youngest son, Peter, was killed in the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center.
He did not work in the building. He was there just for a meeting, and he was 25 years old when he died. My husband and I needed to create a memorial for him, to leave a mark that he had existed and that the world would be a better place because Peter had lived.
Watching a TV show one night, she stumbled on the idea of bringing mental health care to people in poorer countries traumatized by mass violence and terrorism. The first Peter C. Alderman Trauma Treatment Clinic opened in Cambodia in 2005 and was so overwhelmed with patients that a second clinic was established nearby the following year.
People often ask us, why are you seeing patients in Cambodia? I mean, Pol Pot was, what, 30, 35 years ago? Traumatic depression doesn't go away. I mean, you see this in children of Holocaust survivors. Traumatic depression can go from one generation to the next, and unless you treat it, it's still there.
In Uganda, where there are 4 clinics, patients include many former child soldiers and others abducted into war over 2 decades by the Lord's Resistance Army. James Okello directs the clinic in Gulu in the north, which helps patients through counseling, group therapy, and psychopharmacology.
I think almost every trauma, if there's no form of intervention, definitely there's going to be a problem. We also sometimes talk about delayed post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, that there's usually the concept that when the guns stop firing, then the mind starts firing. So a lot of these things happen when the emergency situation is long gone.
The clinics are set up in partnership with governments in each country and staffed solely by indigenous health caregivers who understand traumatic mental illness, both in medical terms and according to local culture.
We use cultural idioms to express the same Western symptoms. So I think anybody that is not culture literate, you know, if you do not understand a certain culture, you are likely to miss a lot or to even overdiagnose, depending on which tool you're using.
The foundation also has a clinic in the Kibera slum in Nairobi, Kenya, and has worked in Rwanda, Liberia, and Haiti. It funds a new medical publication, the African Journal of Traumatic Stress. Alderman says more than 200 indigenous healthcare professionals have been trained, who have gone on to teach others, and care has reached more than 75,000 patients. Carolyn Weaver, VOA News, New York.
And Mr. Talbert and Dr. Newton, again, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we heard this report. This was an example of a group that was helping post-conflict victims cope with some of the trauma. Let me start with you, Mr. Talbert. The work that Emergency USA does is very, very similar to what we heard. You work globally in many different countries, and you've been doing this for several years now, helping victims of war. Tell us about what EUSA has done in the past.
Yeah, thank you, Leonard. So Emergency was founded 20 years ago, and our primary focus is on surgical care. So we provide high-standard free-of-charge surgery. This is one of the largest unmet needs in these post-conflict areas that we as an organization we can take on. And as you heard from the foundation before, there's no shortage of need. I always love hearing about other organizations doing really great work. But for Emergency, our focus is on surgical capacity and providing these health regional solutions to healthcare. So, for example, in Sierra Leone, Emergency has built the only high-standard, free-of-charge surgical center in the nation. We work a lot with local staff, you know, all the way from surgeons, doctors, nurses, as well as employing folks, and providing training. Because in addition to healthcare, you know, we also were working on providing education and jobs in these areas.
Okay, and having access to surgery is very, very critical in a setting like this, and in a setting where people have gone through conflict, because some of the injuries are, of course, very, very difficult to address. And Dr. Newton, could you please give us a sense of some of the very common type of difficulties or type of challenges, health challenges that people will be faced with when going through conflict and after conflict?
Yes, thanks. I think there is a long list of problems that happen, particularly my experiences mainly in Ghana and Sierra Leone. But in Sierra Leone, after the conflict there was a large number of amputations that are still living in the country, but they're really handicapped in terms of their ability to work. So those patients need a lot of care. I think the modernization of a lot large swaths of Africa has led to a lot more traumatic injuries because of the road traffic is much increased compared to what it was 15 years ago. And we're seeing a lot of traumatic injuries as well as the chronic endemic type of illnesses that happen. I think what happens in conflict zones is that the infrastructure deteriorates. So the hospitals and schools stop functioning, and a lot of the professional people leave because they are able to leave the conflict. And that kind of decimates the country in terms of their ability to cope with the additional stress of having a lot of trauma patients. Now, so Emergency, I think, fills that need a lot in Sierra Leone and their hospital there, in that they provide a lot of orthopedic care, for example, and that isn't really available anywhere else in the country.
Yes, and that I was going to actually ask about that because, as we know and as you mentioned it, Sierra Leone had undergone this critical problem of amputation. It was very specific to this conflict. And so as of today, Mr. Talbert, when you work there, what do you see in terms of the repercussion of this massive amputation that the population went through? What do you see? What are some of the repercussions?
The amputations have led, for us on the surgical side, you know, these were a lot of young folks. There's a lot of young people in Sierra Leone. And so these amputations happened at a young age where their bones are still growing. So sometimes, you know, our surgical operations are around being able to help fix the skin or the arm or the leg as that continues to grow. And one of the other things, you know, that, you know, talk about challenges, you know, I can tell you the story of Marietta. She's this young girl. She's only 12, and she caught strep throat when she was young at only 4 and just kept coming back. But it went undiagnosed and untreated. And so for Marietta, that very simple strep throat turned into rheumatic heart disease. When she ended up at our hospital in Sierra Leone, because it wasn't clear what was going on with her. She's a lot of challenges, feeling very sick, very weak, very just lethargic. And so we brought her in, and this is part of, like, our collaboration across borders. One of our doctors was visiting from our hospital in Sudan and was able to provide a medical screening, recognize that she had heart disease, and able to transfer from our free hospital in Sierra Leone to our free hospital in Sudan that's a specialized cardiac center. She got the open heart surgery, and now she's back home with her friends and family, going to school and feeling much better.
Okay.
But through a challenge we didn't anticipate, but luckily we've been able to meet.
Okay. Dr. Newton, to what extent is heart disease perhaps a repercussion of conflict? We've seen that Emergency USA has this big hospital in Sudan, as Mr. Talbot mentioned. So can you tell us how this conflict can be a cause of heart disease?
Well, I think the conflict affects the ability to deliver health care to the whole population. So in times of conflict, the physicians and nurses and technicians and so on are not as available to provide antibiotics and to treat patients who have infectious diseases. And strep, which is a very common cause of rheumatic heart disease, ends up not being treated. It would be very simple to treat with inexpensive antibiotics and prevent the heart disease, but in those times of conflict, then there is no ability to deliver that to the population. And other infectious diseases like cholera, typhoid, and even malaria become more prominent and more prevalent in times of conflict.
Okay. Now, what is the current status of health in Sierra Leone? And you work in other countries, and we will talk about the other countries, but I kind of wanted to wrap up with Sierra Leone by asking, and perhaps Mr. Talbert, you can answer that. What is the current status now?
So from the emergency side in Sierra Leone, what we're working on is, you know, our model is building the hospitals that we as folks lucky enough to live in, you know, in Washington, D.C. or New York or L.A., where we would want to take our friends and family to. So this is a hospital we've built in Sierra Leone, and it was built during the conflict. And so we've been able to see the transition post-conflict. So some of the challenges, obviously, as the conflict was happening, was a lot of war surgery, a lot of amputations. Once that ended, we were able to expand into pediatrics. And so we see a lot of pediatrics patients there. And then also something we hadn't planned for is we do a lot of esophageal surgeries, and this is a very specialized program that came from the need of the population, and it continues to be a challenge. There's, you know, caustic lye is used very commonly for homemade soap, and the young children accidentally ingest that. It looks like sugar or salt in the crystal form or like milk, so they accidentally drink that and causes very severe burns in the throat. Mm. And this is a lifelong injury. So they're able to come to our surgical center in Sierra Leone to get the free surgery to do that initial life-saving procedure, but then they come back. They're able to come back for free the rest of their lives to continue to get their throat dilated so they're able to, you know, live a somewhat normal, healthy life. Mm-hmm. This is one of the challenges we see going forward, and being able to do these more complex, complicated procedures. As well as Marietta, I mentioned earlier, she still comes back, as a lot of the patients do, for checkups every 2 to 3 months. So it's important that we have this long-term solution to be able to provide health care to everybody and take on these new challenges as we move forward.
Okay, we have a question from Aisha, actually. She's in Sierra Leone, and she's asking, where is your hospital located and what type of services do you provide? I think you partly answered the question, but perhaps you can go over, you can respond.
So folks who are listening in Sierra Leone, the hospital's in Godrich, which is just south of Freetown. It's off of Peninsula Road, if you're going out towards Locker Beach. The services there we provide, as Dr. Newton had mentioned, is orthopedic surgery. So if there's a severe car accident, or we see a lot of work-related broken bones, a highly specialized orthopedic surgeon, as well as any pre- and postnatal care at our pediatric clinic that's open there as well. And then the specialized throat injury, this esophageal burns, are our main focus. But we're also, we send folks in from our hospital in Sudan to do these cardiac screenings. So if people know their kids have had strep throat or have gone undiagnosed, but also we provide penicillin, as Dr. Newton mentioned. This is key to being able to prevent the strep from developing into heart disease. So that's also available at the hospital there.
And we have Johnny in Liberia. He's asking, do you take patients from other country? I think
we do. Yeah, we've treated a lot of folks. This is part of our approach for the a larger vision we have for what's called the African Network for Medical Excellence, but being able to provide regional solutions. So we treat folks from Liberia, from Ghana, from other areas nearby at that hospital in Sierra Leone, and then if they need be transferred to another cardiac specialist center.
Okay. All right. And we are going to take a short break. Dr. Newton and Mr. Talbot, stay with us. When we come back, we have more questions coming in for you. Don't go away. It's time for the news.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is post-conflict healthcare. Joining us via phone from San Francisco is Eric Talbert, Executive Director of the global nonprofit Emergency USA, and Dr. Ed Newton, a member of Emergency USA Medical Advisory Council. And a reminder that you can join our conversation by calling 226-193-111 or email us at healthchat@voanews.com. And let's talk about now the Central African Republic, which is one of the countries where you work presently. This is one of the countries with an ongoing crisis. Can you give us a sense of what is happening in terms of the work that you're providing? Where are the priorities, Dr. Newton? Have you been to the Central African Republic?
No, I haven't, but and Eric can probably address that better than I can, but they have a very functional pediatric hospital in the Central African Republic, mm-hmm. which is oftentimes, during the peak of the conflict, the only functioning hospital in that zone. But I'll let Eric discuss it.
Okay. Mr. Talbert?
Yeah, Dr. Newton mentioned we have a pediatric center we opened in 2009 in Bangui, basically right across the street from the parliament. And then as, you know, it's been in an area in turmoil for a while. And once the violence escalated after the coup going on over a year ago, we sent in a surgical team as well to provide war-related injuries services to the victims there who end up at the main hospital in Bangui. So we have a satellite surgical team at the public hospital, and our own pediatric clinic in Bangui and treating a lot of war-related injuries. A lot of kids are showing up. There's a young woman named Pauline. She's only 9 years old. She showed up a couple of weeks ago with a really, you know, machete wound to the head. Wow. But luckily, somebody from the rural area, there's a lot of really great groups doing amazing work throughout Central African Republic, and one of them brought them to the surgical center, and we were able to treat her and save her life, and luckily, she made it in time.
Okay. Now, when you provide care, when you provide services with surgeries, Dr. Newton, there is a lot that goes into surgery. What do you, in terms of the follow-up care, how are you able to take care of the patient? Do you have a team in place that ensures that the patient is taken care of after the surgery? Or what do you do?
Yeah, I think surgery requires a lot of infrastructure and a lot of personnel to really be successful. The challenges that they faced in Sierra Leone were things like the electricity supply is sporadic and it goes off on a schedule at times that you can't really do surgery without electricity. You need ventilators and monitors and things like that that require electricity. So they brought in their own generators to generate their own electricity with diesel fuel, which is an expensive way to do it, but it provides 24-hour, 24/7 electricity for the hospital. And then the drinking water issue, you need clean water. The water available in Goderich was not up to medical standards, so they created their own water purification plant and things like that. So it's not simply just building a hospital. I think there's a lot of infrastructure and engineering that goes into creating a functional hospital. Mm-hmm. In terms of the surgery, they have very well-qualified surgeons. I was very impressed by the quality of people that they have working in Emergency USA. These are top-notch European, mainly, surgeons. And there's a whole surgical team. There's about a 100-bed hospital for post-operative patients or pre-operative patients as well, and a very good nursing staff. There's an ICU for patients who are critical, but also for the immediate post-op period, they can recover in there and then gradually convalesce. There's also a lot of rehabilitation work that goes on in this hospital that they have a very active physiotherapy and occupational therapy program for people that have sustained injuries. So they rehabilitate them on scene as well.
Okay. So do you work with hospitals that are already established, or do you have to build a hospital every time you go somewhere?
No, I don't build the hospitals. I don't really. I haven't even worked in Sierra Leone for a long time. But Emergency is a group from Milan, Italy, that goes in and builds a hospital. And they have acquisition of the site, the analysis of where the greatest needs are. And then they do the architectural work and the engineering work and build the actual hospital. And then the issue is to equip it properly with modern equipment. And all of this happens in phases. So it takes them a little while to build a really functional hospital, because these are really high standard hospitals. But that's the process, and I think they've done it in multiple countries. Afghanistan, there are several hospitals there, Iraq, Cambodia. They have previously had hospitals in Angola and other places like that, where they've turned over the hospital eventually to the local health authorities once it's up and functioning and there are sufficient trained people in place to take over the operation of the hospital.
Okay. Now, Elizabeth in Rwanda is asking, do you provide surgeries to pregnant women, C-section surgeries?
They don't have a gynecologist, but the general surgeons are capable of doing a C-section, an emergency C-section.
Okay.
So not routine C-sections, but if it happened as an emergency, then they would be able to.
Okay. Now, Mr. Talbert, can you kind of give us a sense of the countries where you work in Africa?
Yeah, so it's Sierra Leone, as we mentioned, Sudan, the Central African Republic, and that's our current setup. So we have the hospitals and the clinics there, and then our future goal with the African Network for Medical Excellence, we already have an understanding of agreement, cross-border collaboration with 10 other bordering countries around Sudan. So we're looking at South Sudan, Chad, and then right now it looks like the next major hospital to move forward is looking like it's going to be in Uganda.
Okay. Now, where do you have your health centers? Do you choose specific locations? Does it have to be in the city, in the rural area? What are the criteria where you choose to establish your services?
Yeah, it depends on where the need is, but we typically set up the hospitals near the capital because there is a lot of transferring of patients. We want to be able to treat as many people as possible, provide health care to kids. So having access to that international airport is important for these types of procedures. So the hospitals are typically near the capital, and then the clinics tend to be further out in the rural area. So it's a hub-and-spoke approach to be able to treat as many people as possible.
You also mentioned earlier in the discussion that not only you address health challenges, you also address education and jobs. Can you tell us about the importance of this integrated approach? How do you go about it?
Oh, this is crucial. For us, we have, for example, in Sierra Leone, there's maybe about 15 international staff there who provide, training and education for the surgeons, the doctors, the nurses. But we have employ about 250 locals in Sierra Leone. And again, nurses, doctors, surgeons, all the help that it takes to run a hospital. This is really important for us because of the community impact. They're involved from the beginning. It's a partnership. As Dr. Newton mentioned, our vision is to be able to turn these hospitals over to the communities so the people there can continue to run them high standard free of charge. Our international staff can go home or can maybe go to another conflict zone and help out there, but that they become sustainable and self-sufficient.
Where do you start in building a health system that has collapsed after a conflict? Where do you even start?
We start with working with the ministers of health.
Okay.
And making sure that we reach out to them in collaboration and making sure this is something they want to partner on. And under the guise of high standard, free of charge health care and this long-term commitment to be able to provide local jobs, education, and treatment. And because this is a long-term process, sometimes we think of things in 3 to 5 year terms. And a lot of the work we do, we got to start thinking in 10 and 20-year terms. To be able to provide the type of services these folks deserve.
Now, and we're running out of time, but Dr. Newton, I wanted to come to you. If you kind of give us a sense of when a country undergoes conflict and it is at the end of the conflict, as a medical doctor, where do you think that the priorities should be in terms of providing care to the population?
Well, there are special needs that are a result from the conflict that are war injuries and civilian injuries that are sustained in war. Most of the victims of war are civilians. Up to 90% of the victims of war are unarmed civilians. So there are a lot of injuries in that population. But then I think for just the public health priorities that you have to be concerned about infectious diseases that would normally be controlled. But if you have people living in refugee camps, for example, maybe the sanitation is not as good as it could be, and there's a risk of rapid spread of infectious disease throughout that whole population.
Okay.
I think nutrition is another important aspect that is sometimes threatened during conflict times where people just can't get enough to eat, and then their immune systems become deficient, and then their general health starts to deteriorate.
Okay. And Dr. Newton, Mr. Talbert, thank you for joining us. And Emergency USA is holding a Coffee Meets Conversation on May 20th. It's an event to discuss what the organization is doing. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
And thanks to our listeners. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.